She Called That Radio, Season 4, Episode 22. And today's episode is actually from about 2 years ago. But we're just going back in time. Sadly, for sad reasons, because my guest today is Paul Wellens, a.k.a. the Antisocial Worker, who sadly passed away in July. I don't know much about the details, but I know that he was in hospital and stuff like that. So, yeah, I just thought I'd put out this interview for Prosperity, and he was a character. I never met him in real life, but he was on, or you call that radio's live streams, various times, and we spoke each other quite regularly through email and messenger and stuff like that. And he was always trying to, you know, arrange gigs or arrange podcasts and stuff like that. But basically his background was Pirate Radio, LWR, the iconic pirate radio station. He toured with people like Peter Tosh, Billy Bragg, John Cooper Clark, and Benjamin Zephaniah. He also recorded his first album with the Mad Professor of Massive Attack fame. He was championed by the likes of John Peel, and he was also a writer for the NME in the good old days of music journalism, and he DJed as Mad Hatter Paul as well. So yeah, this is about, I've not actually listened to this interview back yet, but Mako, shouts to Mako, he mixed and mastered it, so it should be of a high quality. But I just remember from the interview that he was a character, a bit of a cockney geezer, sharing all sorts of stories from behind the scenes of the music industry and music journalism. And he was discussing his newest projects as the Antisocial Worker. So yeah, it was sad news to hear that he'd passed away. All the best to his friends and family. And hopefully you can enjoy this interview as much as I enjoyed having it. So yeah, this is from back in 2022. But 2022. This is an interview with Paul Wellens, the Antisocial Worker.
One, two. Yo, this is Charlie Tuna from Jurassic 5 Live and Direct here in Glasgow, Scotland, and you call that radio?
As you call that radio TV, we are live. It's Sober October, so I'm staying in the house tonight. And I'm sure a few more of you are as well. So I'm an absolute honour to welcome a very special guest on tonight. An impromptu chat with an absolute legend. NME, a former NME writer, wrote for loads of different newspapers and music magazines, La Mojo, as well, part of the Antisocial Workers, a massive dub band in the 80s, and very influential, and he's just released a solo album under the name Antisocial Worker, which just came out as well. And yeah, poet, rapper, loves a bit of the grime as well. I was just talking to him there off air. And we were going to do a pre-recording, but we just decided to go live. So feel free to interact if you're watching this live. It's 14th of October. If it's not the 14th of October, just leave a comment and I'll try to reply to everyone I can. It's Paul Wellens. Welcome.
Yo,
to the
bro.
Show,
yeah, what are you saying, mate? What are you saying?
Well, mate, I'm just, as I'm saying, I'm sober October. And I'm having to quit booze in order to quit smoking. All the regular viewers are sick of me talking about how I've quitting smoking. But I'm sick of smoking at the weekends and quitting every weekend. I've got my vape here because I'm on live on air. This is the strongest thing I'll have. The Robo Snout's the strongest thing I'm having tonight. Yeah. A cup of tea. But it's great to speak to you, mate. I've been reading up on a lot of your stuff. You've worked with some absolute legends over the years. You have, we'll plug the album straight away though. Let's just plug the album straight away before I forget. It's out now. It is on m1music.com. And a social worker, militant business and grime poetry. And the great thing about the term grime poetry is that we had the amazing Don on the show the other day from, he's a Geordie grime poet. Mm. And he just made his first, he's been doing a lot of poetry for the last 10 years. I don't know how long he's been doing it. I've known him for about 10 years and he's done poetry. And then in the last couple of years he started doing it over a beat and he's nailing it. And I think the Geordie accent sounds fantastic on it. So, but yeah, so it's good to, two grime poets in a month on You Call That Radio. So pleased to have you on the show, mate. Let's go, let's go to the first song you ever wrote. How did that come about? When did you start writing? Did the journalism, did the writing come before the raps or the poetry? What happened?
Well, I mean, I've got the first poem here if you want to hear it. Do you want to hear it live?
Yes, mate, of course.
Yeah.
That's a good way to start the show. About it.
Let's do it. I mean, this was written when I was 19 years old and it didn't make it onto the first Antisocial Workers album, but it went on to the current album with a sort of very heavy hip-hop beat behind it. It's called Master Race Face. You get respect. Sorry, take two. To get respect, you have to give respect. You're the face that launched a thousand zits. You can't read out old diary without moving your lips. The only woman's movement you like is from the waist down. You'll make some girl feel rich, a cosmetic surgeon. Being dumb as you look would need a frontal lobotomy. You're like Frankenstein's monster with Eagle's personality. Someone said you look like Jimmy Dean, an old lady with a white stick. If my dog had your face, I'd shave its arse and make it walk backwards quick. You've nothing north of the shoulders. You losing charades to Mr. Wonder. Letting you live at all was your mum's biggest blunder. You'd have to study for a blood test. You belong to Pooper. You think manual labour is the president of Cuba. You say this is the white land of your dreams, all of them wet. You reckon you grow on people, but so do hairy warts. You've done for equal rights what Psycho did for showers. You're the master race face, born to crawl and cower. Thank you. That's me.
Superb, mate. Superb. Where's my round of applause button? I've got a round of applause button, surely. Where is it? I do. Yeah, I already changed that one, actually. Quarantine stream, all that stuff needs to go in the bin. But that was brilliant, mate. No, 19-year-old.
19 years old, I wrote that, yeah, because it was the rise of, you know, all the rock against races, anti-Nazi league and all that. And there was all these Nazi bands coming out, and I just thought, no, we ain't having that. And, you know, because I spent, like, 30 years of my life in the East End, in London's Tower Hamlets Borough, which the Collingwood Estate. Yeah, it's probably the most multicultural place on the planet, you know, Tower Hamlets. But basically, yeah, so I started off doing a bit of poetry, and then I met some guy when I was working on a local newspaper writing about music and football and stuff like that, and I met these dudes just outside North London, we formed the Antisocial Workers, and we were just like spitting bars over the top of like what they call version excursions, you know, the dub side of a reggae single. So you'd have Aswad's Warrior Charge as an instrumental, and we'd just do our poetry over the top of that. And then we took it to this guy called the Mad Professor, who was in Peckham, South East London at the time, who went on to be like the biggest dub producer in the UK, you know, by far. He's like the equivalent of Lee Scratch Perry in Jamaica, you know. And he produced all these original dub tunes, and we put an album out, and it was called Positive Style in 1983. It got onto the front cover of Sounds magazine. We got interviewed by the NME and everything, and it all took off. We started touring with Eka Mouse, you know, the reggae icons like Eka Mouse, Marley's partner Peter Tosh. We ended up doing the London Dominion Theatre to a massive crowd there. That was a sellout. And although, having said that, some of the reggae purists didn't like us because we were like these roughneck punks. And some of them were throwing plastic glasses at us and all that. But, you know, I can take that. I'm a big boy. And but that was great. And then that sort of fizzled out. And then I got into DJing. I was doing, like, Ministry of Sound in London. I was doing Pasha in Ibiza. And that was what I was really doing, really, and a bit of poetry, a bit of street poetry. And then, you know, I'm bringing up families and all the usual stuff that goes on in your life. You know, sometimes the artist has to go on the back burner. And but when Johnson got in, I felt this real righteous anger rising up because I just thought he was such a liar, such a fraud. And it's always triggered me, that sort of class war that the super rich start, you know. And I thought, you know what, I'm going back in this studio. I'm going to go in as Antisocial Worker, singular, as opposed to the workers. And I put out this album called Militant Business and Grind Poetry. It's doing really well. You know, we've had plays on Radio 1, 1 Extra, 6 Music. It was all done in one take, the album. It was done in two hours. I did it in one take. All the tunes were selected on the day, mainly hip-hop and grind tunes. And, you know, for a small independent label, doing all that in one take and, you know, getting rave reviews and that kind of radio coverage, you know, for a black-owned indie label as well. It's owned by a guy called Le Magnifique, who's sort of West, in my opinion, Northwest London's finest rapper. And, yeah, him and this guy called Cutmaster Robinson, who's the producer, they created the tunes for me, and I just spat my bars over the top of it. And, you know, I'm really proud of it, and I'm doing festivals coming up, and I'm getting an agent, you know, I'm getting an agent in London who represents, you know, some of the top comedians in the country and stuff, so and poets, so, you know, I'm hoping to get some big work out of it. I want to get Glastonbury, you know, on the small stage, and you know, Rebellion and all that stuff, you know, that's what I want to do.
Amazing, mate, amazing. And it's a good idea, I think, doing that. Doing an album quickly like that, I tend to find that if I could set myself a deadline and I stick to it, some amazing things happen. But then I think I overdid it the last time, so this time I've been taking my time, and as a result, not much is happening because you just got all the time in the world. So it's good to have a deadline, isn't it?
Yeah, that was that for sure. Yeah,
but you seen one take. I mean, I'm assuming that you pored over the lyrics for a while. You were practicing.
Oh, yeah. No, don't like get that. Me wrong. I didn't do it freestyle. I'd written all the lyrics beforehand. I'd written all the lyrics beforehand, but I literally did them in one take. We didn't do any edits, nothing. No, you know, the whole album was recorded in 2 hours, and that's straight. I'm telling you straight. That's what it was. Yeah, so.
Amazing. We've got Jim Morning, who's. We sometimes do a poetry slam one here. We do one a year, and we do like a wee quarterfinal, semifinals, and a final. Yeah. Jim Warren's known as the Grumpy Judge, and he's actually said excellent poem.
Oh, so, wow.
I think the highest he's ever given anyone is a 5, and he's given it a 6 out of 10. So
is
that's
he really? That's, wow. I'm not worthy.
That's good.
Oh, I'm honoured. I'm blessed.
I think you like Jim's
blessed
stuff. He's got a lot of anti-fascist, anti-racist poetry coming from a Scottish perspective.
Spirit. Yeah, nice.
But yeah, man. Well, Katie Christie's now. Hello, Katie. She says it was awesome.
All right, Katie, love it.
Stuart Graham's in the house. Hello, Stuart. Paul says that was a solid poem for a 19-year-old. I was drinking Thunderbirds.
So was I, mate. That's probably what inspired it.
Is it Thunderbird or Thunderbirds? Is it just Thunderbird?
I call it Thunderbird. I don't know. I mean, also...
I've just never seen it written down. It's not, you know...
He used to drink that horrible stuff, barley wine. I don't know if you've ever drunk that. Oh, God.
I don't know barley wine, but Thunderbirds did exist when we were doing underage drinking, but I was Mary a Mary Down man myself.
You're Mary Down Cider. Well, that was the other one we had.
Mary Down Cider and what was the other one? Mad Dog 2020.
Yeah, all lethal, yeah.
Yeah, but it's Sober October. Different
I'm doing the Guinness tonight.
It was a different era. It was last month. It was last month. Also, Paul's added as well that Mad Professor was amazing.
Mad Professor's amazing,
Loved his dub mix of the Protection album, Massive Attack.
No, he's a legend. He's worked with all of them, right? Massive Attack, Sade. You know, he's a remix producer in great demand. And We had some great times with him in the studio. He literally lives up to his name. He's like mad as a box of frogs, you know. but beautiful, beautiful album he produced for us, you know. I mean, he made our fairly standard lyrics sound, you know, super cool because of his dub rhythms, you know.
I seen that you say that you had a good line about name dropping. That you can say you don't like the name drop. I'll let you say that name. But we actually have a part of the show called The Name Drop. And I was going to get the name drops. I want to get your name drops out of the way.
Name drop.
You called that radio.
Now, obviously, Mad Professor, to do what with Mad Professor, that's a name drop and a half.
Yeah, I'll pick that one up off the floor. Yeah, okay. Sure. The trouble with being a journalist is you have met a lot of so-called celebrities. You know, most of them are arseholes, but, you know, I'd rather be down my mates through the pub than some of these celebrity parties. But, you know, the trouble is, you know, as I said earlier, you know, that's the nature of journalism. You do meet those people. So, you know, I worked for the NME for, like, throughout the 80s, so I met a few people, you know. Some good, some bad, some ugly.
Yeah. But I think there is maybe a point of celebrity, though. They're not living normal lives, are they? So they're just travelling in the world and everyone's kissing their ass.
Yeah, that's true.
So they're not living. So I think it must be quite hard to stay grounded and stay a normal person.
It is, yeah. I mean, me and you, we're real ones, you know what I mean? What we call you in London, you're a real one. And, you know, once you, as you say, I mean, I've got another poem, actually. I'll read that. It's very appropriate, actually, for what you're talking about. Let me find it. Talk amongst yourselves. Go on.
Talk amongst the comments.
I got it.
All right, well, I thought
I'm going to talk about you if you want.
No. It's not all about me.
Here we go.
Take it away.
This is from the new album, right? It's called Real. Going out talking spitters, drillers, rappers, shellers, sprayers, shutters, hustlers, trappers and barers. She said music is not competition. Music is a mission. Wise up and rise up. Ain't got no Lambo. Ain't got no diamond grill. Ain't got a million in the bank. I'm real. Ain't got bikini video models. Ain't got a fur coat. Ain't popping crisps. I'm real. Ain't got a private jet. Ain't got a luxury crib. Ain't lighting cigars with dollars. I'm real. I'm real. I'm real. I'm a real one. I swear down. There you go.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's all about how hip hop has been commercialized, and you know, I mean, my hip hop that I love is stuff like Public Enemy and Tupac and all that, but that's proper conscious hip hop, you know. Whereas the stuff that's coming out now, every fucking video has got like a private jet and you know, in mink coats, and I just thought it's got no relation to my world or the people I grew up with at all, you know.
It seems to be that's the sort of chart side of the thing. But as you're just saying off air, you're talking about you're a massive fan of grime and how it's the
new
punk.
Yeah, it is the new punk because it's got minimalist beats, it's anti-authority, you know, it's very militant, anti-establishment, it's DIY music. A lot of people just do it on their laptop at home. I mean, I got into it when it first started about 20 years ago. I went into this... my mate's shop in Essex, he had a record store, and he said, Paul, you've got to listen to this, mate. And it was a tune called Dollar Sign by Sticky. And I thought, fucking hell, this is super cool. What is this? And he goes, I don't know what it's called, but it's like a new form of music. And it was one of the very first grime tunes ever. And I thought, this is like fresh. I love it. And you know, I've lived and breathed the scene ever since, you know. I love it. I listen to One Extra all day long, listening to grime. You know, I've got hundreds of grime albums. I've seen loads of grime acts live, and yeah.
So did you say that the new singles got played in One Extra?
Yeah,
and so yeah, One Extra, Six Music,
and Radio One on the specialist shows in the evening. Obviously, it's not going to get played in the daytime.
Still getting Radio One
because it's got words like pussyhole and all that on it. You know what I mean? I ain't going to get away with that.
Although
I have had a radio edit of it. They actually took Pussy Ho out. They've done their own edit of it. So on one, I think it was like Radio Essex or something like that.
I've had swear words on Six Music before, but it's just because they didn't understand my accent.
Really? And
then, yeah, they just.
What was that with your hip hop thing?
I've got this band called Gyro Babies, which is like so it's kind of post punk sort of thing. But it was the song went, I'm not an arsehole, I'm a secret animal, and it was quite blatantly said that three times in the song. And then there's another bit when
what time did that go out?
Fucking dinner time.
Really?
Told they bought shit. I said as well the word shit, but I said that quite fast, so it was. I think I can understand why that's fell under the radar, but I thought maybe arsehole isn't a swear word. I don't know, but they played it.
But then the next time you get away with a-hole. But I mean, I like that Gyro Babies. You sent me all the links to your music. You know, I've always said like Concert Angels. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
I don't think
they were a very big post punk band in the sort of early 80s. Yeah, I loved them.
Yeah, I've got a note of them. I've got it on my phone to check them out.
Yeah, I think you'd like them. Yeah,
I will definitely check them out. But also, Jeremy Kyle, we had a song called Jeremy Kyle Fucking My Wife, but Paul Heaton played that on the radio. But he did a radio edit of it so he reversed the word fuck, so it's Jeremy Kyle's been fucking my wife.
He's got a new show coming out soon. Christ knows why.
Tam Devan is here, everyone loves a secret animal. Tam hosts a secret animal's the song that I just mentioned. It's got a garden party, secret animal garden party's now out. Got Mary Down for the win. Mad Professor is the boss.
He is.
Stuart enjoyed your last poem.
Oh, lovely.
Real
Lewis
good.
Talking
like
about
that.
Mary Down silver. I can't remember if it was silver or gold.
I had silver. Yeah.
I don't really remember what the difference was. What was the difference? One was dry and one was
sweeter, wasn't it? Yeah.
Sweet. All right, okay. That makes sense. Jeremy Kyle's been riding my bike, correct? That's the radio edit. Let's stop talking about me. Going back to the enemy journalism, you were writing in the 80s, so I was probably a bit too young for your comments, but I was obsessed with it in the 90s when I was buying it every week. I bought, if I had enough money, I'd maybe buy the Melody Maker as well, but I always preferred the NME. I just loved the sort of form of journalism back then, and I think it was a bit more exciting. I do write for my own website. I try and do music journalism. It's a very hard art form, man, because I don't really like putting things down. If I don't get nothing nice to say, I try not to write about it at all. And it's difficult to, write in an artistic way to find an interesting way of saying that you like something. So I've got a lot of respect for music journalists. Have you got any advice? My advice, this is another name drop, this is advice I got
from Danny Baker, who's now a little bit, he's been cancelled a little bit now. But
what's he been cancelled for?
I'll better not go into all that because it might be legalistic. But so he told me always don't write about the band and what songs they played, what clothes they're wearing. Just write about what you did that day, all the funny things that happened on your journey, and then just mention the band at the end. And that's what I used to do, because I led quite a lively life. I was a bit of a rascal, and I always used to talk about that side of stuff and then just mention the band at the end.
That's a brilliant idea, man. Do you know what? You're right as well, because when I have done it before, it has been like, more like a, the story of getting to the show and coming back and
I did all that.
Because what you're doing is you're writing a short story.
And it's
actually like a piece of art in its own right.
You nailed it.
Ali Grant says you guys would do a decent cover of Comsat Angels Independence Day.
Tune. Big
Katie
tune.
Katie says, always look for your articles in the NME because I'm way older than Mark. Katie's aware of your stuff. So
I went under a few pseudonyms. I used to go under the pseudonym because I was worried about my benefits getting cut. So I used to go under Terry Malloy, which is my favourite character in On the Waterfront, the Marlon Brando film.
Yeah.
And I also went as Paul Kicks because there was an Adrian Frills around at the time. So I thought I'd call myself Paul Kicks. But I did write under my real name for the Melody Maker. I went under the name Jimmy Mack for Sounds when I wrote for them. And I did some poems as Jimmy Mack as well on a few punk albums. But I've always, nowadays, obviously, I've written like two or three, slim little volumes on popular culture, some books that were published by an independent socialist publisher. And I've written under my own name, obviously. I mean, I wrote a thing called...
I think you froze there, mate. Paul has frozen. But what we'll do is we'll play one of his, the new single, and hopefully we'll get him back. Paul, if you can hear me, I think what you just need to do is log out and log back in again, and we'll get the end of that story. Yeah, sorry, man. Oh, you're back.
Oh, good. All right. Sorry, I don't know what happened there.
You're back. I can hear you fine.
Yeah, I wrote a book called I'm a Journalist, Get Me Out of Here, which is all about my life on The Enemy and The Mirror. And it was all about the sort of, I was just there at when it was a very street smart time in music journalism, you know. And there were very few working class writers on the music press. There were a lot of sort of middle class guys in leather jackets, but there weren't too many people from my kind of background. But the... And then the second one.
Yeah, okay. So I think there's...
Have I got it again? I'm doing this in stages. And and then the other two were, I did a thing called Sex, Lines and Videotape, which is like cult film quotes, because I'm a massive film fan. I've got about 1,000 films indoors. But, and then the last one was The Divine Comedians, which was... quotes from radical stand-up comedians, people I love like Richard Pryor and I don't know, whatever, Russell Brand or whoever. Yeah, so I've done a little bit of that.
How can you get the books?
Oh, they're all on Amazon and, you know, decent bookshops can order them, Waterstones. I've done like book signings in Waterstones and all that. But they're only slim little volumes. I mean, don't expect too much for Christ's sake. But, you know,
Have you turned them into audiobooks yet?
No, we never did that. No, it was done on a thing called a Progressive Press, which they did a, I think they did a book by Tony Benn, and they did a lot of socialist imprints anyway.
When you were enemy journalist, I take it that's how you met James Brown. I'm just looking at the list of the name drops.
Yeah,
James Brown. I think that's probably the name drop of the year.
That was one of the shortest interviews I ever did. I met him at some kind of, I think it was the DJ, what was it called now? DJ of the Year Awards or something like that. And he was performing live. And I just met him backstage and I literally spoke to him for about a minute. And then when he was on stage, I managed to touch his flair, which was, I don't know, it meant something to me. I don't know why. I was really into funk at the time. And I touched his massive, great 40-inch flares he was wearing. I don't know. Seems silly now, but yeah. No, I know, he's a legend, yeah.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but that was the one that stuck it. Can we just get any more name drops out of the way just now before I play your new single?
Oh, I'm going to sound such a dickhead, like quoting people I've interviewed. Is that what you want?
Yeah, I do. That's what I do. I'll be telling everyone I interviewed Paul Wellens next week, so... What was the line as well? You're saying you don't like to name drop, so you can start off with that one because I thought that was funny. You don't like to name drop, as you were telling.
I can't remember. Well, I used to say, as I said to Nelson Mandela, I don't like name droppers, but he's no longer here, so I don't know.
That's right.
As I said to the Pope recently, yeah, that's how I updated it. Well, what do you want? Well, I just do my favourites, really.
Because we talked about earlier on about how it's hard to keep grounded and not become an arsehole with the fame. So who stayed sound? Well, who kept it real?
The most memorable ones for me were, Paul Weller was very memorable, but he was a miserable sod, I've got to be honest. And I love his music. I've always loved Paul Weller from The Jam, you know, Style Council, everything. I loved him. And I did Reggie Cray as well, which was, that's pretty heavy, you know what I mean? So I did him in Parkhurst Prison, yeah. And he gave you one of them handshakes that, you know, you sort of checked how many fingers you had after shaking hands with him. But yeah, so that was an interesting one. You know, we got spun as we went in. You know, he sent us a VO just saying, bring me some Ruffman cigarettes and God bless Reg and all this. I mean, not that I was, you know, I don't hero worship scumbags, but it was, you know, and they were bad people in the East End. I knew his, I got introduced to him by his brother Charlie Cray. He was actually a bit of a gentleman. You know, he was okay, but obviously the twins were fucking psychopaths, let's be honest. And
a bit raucous.
Sorry?
A bit raucous. I heard the word about raucous. Rascals.
Oh, bit of a raucous.
Raucous.
A raucous. Oh, yeah. Oh, they called us raucous anyway. Rascals. Oh, yeah, they called us raucous anyway, yeah. I mean, you know, but I don't think they were the sort of Robin Hood characters people paint them out to be. I know they lent on a lot of people who were really struggling, but I don't want to get into that because I don't
It's just the way that people's obsession with crime and stuff as well. And I mean, you're getting crime as well. You know, all these murderers on Netflix
I was mainly interested in you know, what a glamorous life it was in the 60s. That's what I wanted to know, you know, and he did give me a bit of that, but he saved all the best bits probably for his book. But I thought, I ain't going to come in here. I'm going to take everything he says with a pinch of salt. I ain't going to hero worship scumbags, you know what I mean? And but I did love his brother. I've got to be honest. Charlie Cray treated me lovely, and he wasn't a psycho, you know. He was, and I am a bit drawn to those sort of bad boys, a bit like, you know, a moth to a flame, really. And he'd say to me, oh, don't worry, Paul, no one will touch you. You know, everyone, if anyone wants to whine, you know, I'll iron them out. And if anyone has a go at you, you know what I mean? He was like, fuck it off. I've got Charlie Cray in my corner, you know what I mean? But I'm not.
But you're drawn to the bad boys.
I don't want to glamorise violence. And I don't
favourite TV show is The Sopranos. And I would say that's mine as well.
Oh, I love it.
And I think that's the only TV show, during lockdown, that was... See, I don't really like watching a series again once I've seen it. I think life's too short. I don't really watch much TV anyway. Yeah. So when it's... But my partner, she hadn't seen it yet. So watched it from start to finish. Yeah. And I think it would... Quite so much time had passed as well. So, you know, I would have been in my 20s, early 20s when Sopranos finished. So watching it in your 30s, it was a totally different experience because obviously you're a bit, well, allegedly more mature. in some respects, so there was a lot more that I maybe didn't catch the first time round, and it was
that's right. I mean, Sopranos, you know, the greatest thing on TV in my opinion, and The Wire. We talked about that as well,
and and comedy wise as well. I think Sopranos gets underrated. It doesn't really get mentioned how funny it was at times.
Beautifully written as well.
Should I watch The Wire again? Someone told me that The Wire's dated a little bit because I'm thinking about maybe watching that again instead of watching a new mediocre TV show. I'm thinking about watching another classic. Do you think The Wire...
I watched The Wire about a couple of years ago, season one, and still loved it, yeah. But The Sopranos, I always found... I just couldn't wait for it to come on every week, you know, because it... And by the end of it, it was, so beautifully written, that vulnerability about Tony Soprano, you know, going to see the psychiatrist and, you know... The best drama. And funny enough, when I this is another terrible name drop, but excuse me for
keep
this.
Them coming. I love
it. But when I did some poetry at the Jamaican Calabash Festival on Treasure Beach in Jamaica, and I shared a stage with Lyndon Kwesi Johnson, but at that festival I met David Chase, the creator of The Wire. And was he involved in The Sopranos as well? I can't remember now. Who wrote The Sopranos? I'm getting mixed up now.
Yeah, no, it was a different guy.
It was a different guy for The Sopranos, yeah. But David Chase I met, who did The Wire, because he was talking about Idris Elba. And I said, you know, I've lived, you know, even though I was born in the London New Towns, I said, I grew up, I was raised in the East.
Oh, no, sorry, David Chase did write The Sopranos, sorry.
Oh, he did, sorry, he did, yeah. So I met him. I met the creator of The Wire and The Sopranos, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so the David, who did The Wire then?
I think it was David Chase.
Wow, that's incredible. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, there you go. Double check it. I might be chatting shit.
Let's see. You might be right, though. Hold on. David Simon did The Wire.
Sorry, David. You're right. It was another David, yeah.
I saw David Simon,
but I also saw Tony's nephew, and I forgot the actor's name. He was there as well.
What's oh, yes.
You know the guy. He was always getting in trouble, and Tony was bailing him out all the time.
Yes. Yeah, he's actually, he did.
I've forgotten the actor's name there, but we had yeah, a little
I've got,
chat about
it. Yeah, I've got it here. Because I've actually got a good wee story about him, believe it or not. So Christopher. Multisanti.
I forgot the actor's name, but.
The actor's name, I'm just going to bring it up because it was Michael, sorry if I'm butchering the pronunciation, but Imperioli.
Michael Imperioli. Yeah.
And I've got a good story about him, actually. One of our friends, he's an amazing, James Price, an amazing director. Check him out if you can. He's makes some really hard-hitting short films from Glasgow, from the schemes, or what you would call an estate down there, but we call them schemes up here. So he makes some really good hard-hitting short films. And he just messaged Chrissy Montexandi and said, because he's got a band, and he went, can I make you a music video? And he made him a music video. It is incredible. I'll play that. I'll send you a link to it, actually. And he just kept it completely Scottish. He filmed it in Springburn.
Yeah.
And the guy used it. So a small world. He said, so what was meeting him like?
It was incredible, because I just thought, oh, my God, you know, I idolised that show. And he was just talking about... I think James Gandolfini had just passed at the time, and he was saying how sad it all was, and then no one saw that coming. And I just watched Gandolfini's last movie that he made before he died as well. So it's all quite emotional, really. But I thought, what's little old me doing talking to these giants? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just someone that you watch that much in the telly in real life must be. So he's worried. It does seem like I've seen him in interviews and stuff, and he just seems like a very good actor for a start, because the role he played is nothing like he is in real life, obviously. Yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes you get people that just play themselves, like Joe Pesci, I imagine, is just Joe Pesci.
have you heard the Joe Pesci Sings album? That's hilarious.
He does like
a cabaret thing. He sounds like sort of like a poor man's Frank Sinatra. It's a really funny album.
Well, is it meant to be funny?
No, he's not meant to be funny, but he's funny, yeah.
That might make it funnier. I'll check that out, Joe Pesci Sings. I've got a wee clip here of you, before we get off. Final thing we'll say in the NME is we've got a wee interview you talk on Channel 4, talking about the music business.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll have a copyright issue with this, because we're going back a bit.
It's 92,
and I don't think it's on... It's not on the Channel 4's YouTube channel, so it should be fine. So this is you on Channel 4 talking about the music business in 1992. Yeah. So let's just watch that.
Full of boozers, losers and jacuzzi users. Ever since I was an ace reporter on the music press and a radio DJ, I've always thought the pop industry was a load of old top. Look at Brit Award-winning weekly rocker Rod Stewart. You've got to hand it to Rod for making a living as a singer all these years. His voice reminds me of some poor screamer on the lav, suffering from acute constipation. Marvin Gaye, he ain't. Or take David Essex, please. I was a bit put out to see Mr. Essex manage to get back to civilization after his truck broke down in the desert, 100 miles from anywhere. But seriously, David, do us a favour. The next time you go to the desert, take a few others with you. Like, say, the gay whale merchant, Sting. Housewife's Choice, Cliff Richard. Or Soap Dodger, Sir Bob Geldof. Is someone having a jest when they tell us Yes they've reformed alongside ELP and Mike Oldfield? These are the band that time forgot. LPs, CDs, who gives two monkeys? Slippery deals from slippery eels. With the new boss, same as the old boss. These dinosaurs took an early bath even in high school days, when us rascals discovered there was more sex, seduction and sedition at 5 minutes of a soul weekender than taking your childhood sweetheart to see Yes perform 30-minute tunes like the snappily titled Tales from Topographic Oceans. I bet the Milko whistled that one while delivering his daily pinter. If these geriatrics return, What hope is there for the young and gifted ones trying to pull a dollar? The music business is one of the youngest, wealthiest and most self-indulgent industries of the 20th century. It survives and thrives on geriatric DJs similar to Harry Enfield's characters Nice and Smash. Free trips to America, free lunches, payola, kickbacks, white rasters, heroin-taking rock stars, Valium-choking record executives, overpaid nitwits picking up an annual salary my dad didn't earn in 40 hard-working years, plus out-of-touch talent scouts who discover a dance tune 6 months after it's torn the roof off in the clubs, and then they turn heroes into zeros. What we need is a younger, faster, cleverer, tougher music business. Not the false hair, false teeth, false smiles and false words we get now. We should recognise the real power and influence of the club DJs, encourage the free enterprise of self-run groups like Soul to Soul or feisty ladies like Lisa Stansfield, and get street smart operators...
1992!
God, I sound even more cockney there than I do now, Jesus.
Terrible.
As a chocolate but, yeah, and that was all filmed in Madame Tussauds, obviously, you know, with all the waxwork dummies, but it could have been the real people, you know, had about as much life in him as them.
And what advice would you give to someone like myself who's trying to do interviews? What is a bit of advice if you're doing interviews?
I mean, I'm not saying I'm a great interviewer or anything, but I always, you know, I like to use... you know, very unusual questions. I don't know. But I'd be a good listener, I think. Don't interrupt too much. I think that's important. You know, let them, you know, get their flow going and, you know, just chip in when you've got something decent to say. But don't start saying, you know, what are your influences and, you know, what colour are your underpants or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Just be a bit quirky and, yeah, just be a good listener. I think that's the best advice, yeah.
Listening. Epi says that was a flashback and a half.
It was, yeah.
Tam says, Enter Marky Smith.
I love Marky Smith. Yeah, I went to see him just before he died, and I've always liked the Fall, you know, because John Peel used to play some Antisocial Work, the records on his show, and he played Who's Watching You, which is, I think, you're going to play later. And I saw Mark Smith live, and I watched him backstage, and he was like completely mashed. He was like drinking pint after can after can of bitter or whatever he was drinking. He staggered on stage, he tripped over everything, and he just sort of said something like, you know, I can't do a man caxer, but he just like, how are you, you cunts, or whatever, you know. And But he was shambolic, but he's utterly brilliant. You just couldn't take your eyes off him, you know what I mean?
And we've got a question for you from Jim Monin, who said...
Stuart Cosgrove.
Yeah.
Yeah, from your manor. Yeah, Scottish guy, very good writer. Yeah, we used to fight over the Soul albums, actually, when they came into the offices. I used to try and grab them before he grabbed them to review. But, oh, he's a great writer. Yeah, he's written books on Ali and Black America, Black American music. I think he's got one out right now, actually. He's just come out.
He has just released a book. I can't remember what off the top of my head it is. But I did
it's the link between American music and American politics. And I that might have been one of his previous ones. But I know he went on to be something big in the TV world. I think he was very big on Channel 4 or something.
Yeah, I mean, well, I've
lost contact with him now, but...
I'd lost. I didn't know that he was such a great writer.
Great writer. Yeah.
He's big up here mainly for hosting sports shows like Off the Ball and growing up as a football fan. He was just a really good host. So it was actually later on that I found out that he was such a great writer. But I have asked him. He didn't get back to me. So hopefully,
that's his loss, isn't it?
Marco says The Sopranos brought the Alabama 3 to the world.
They did.
I'm due rewatching it, so I could tell.
Oh, the best. And, yeah, that was everything. That was everything, The Sopranos, here.
A shout out to all Alabama 3. I think we've had every single member of Alabama 3 on here at some point in the time.
Oh, good.
So, shout out to them, great band. And Jim says he was a commission editor for Channel 4 at one
point. That's what he was.
That's it. Yeah, amazing. Colette saying... Mark, ring me when you get a minute. It's Protobell. You're looking, bro. Thank you very much.
Love, baby doll. Aye, aye.
All right, baby doll, sugar tube. That's
baby
that's,
cakes.
That is Colette in the house. Okay, so man, I'm going to play the new single. So you said it was. So you've already kind of hinted that it was Boris Johnson being shite at his job that's kind of inspired this return. Also, so you were the anti-social workers, and now you're the anti-social worker. What happened to the rest of the band?
I don't know, like, we were teenagers, you know what I mean? You had silly little fallouts, all that cliche about musical differences and all that. But, you know, it ran its course. We achieved everything we wanted to achieve. And then I decided I wanted to get into DJing and other stuff, you know? That was it, really. I mean, I don't know what the other guys are doing now. I've got no real contact with them. So, you know, good luck to them, whatever they're doing. But I went in a different direction.
Did you say that you am I right? I was reading an interview with you and you were saying that you actually broke up just as you were just hitting, you were on the front cover of the magazine or something like that?
Yeah, we just got on the front cover of Sounds. And, we did an interview and that was a few arguments about, you know, the interview and what shouldn't have been said, what had been said, and we just thought, oh, you know, let's call it a day. So we quit while we were on the top, I suppose, quit while we were ahead.
Well, this is the new single, and it's off the new album.
Yeah.
It's out now at m1music.com. I'll put a link in the comments.
Yeah.
So you can check out the full
single's
album.
Called War in a Ghetto.
It's War in the Ghetto. And yeah, just give it a wee introduction, man, and I will get, as I'm getting...
You'll be to introduce it now?
Yeah, introduce it, I think we're ready.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this was written about all the knife crime that I was seeing in London and stories I'd heard from mates and family members, and that's what it's all about. It's trying to increase the peace.
I'm a peaceful hustler, but I've seen another life for some. Ego and money chasing, people doing silliness, pure vanities. Don't talk about urban regeneration if you can't regenerate mindsets. If you don't prove yourself, you're going to get stepped on. Only the para survive. You can't be a pussyhole on Hackney Road. Not that manner, too hood. Postcode ghetto wars. Allow it, bro, allow it. We go again. There's inherited beef. 1 minute he goes to the shop with his mate. Next minute he's been stabbed by an orc. Every other day, 5-0 knock at his door. He'd like to go back in time. He knows how everything is going to end up. He's here in his yard. It's safe, it's calm. It's not safe out there. Exploited, trafficked. Keeping thugs sweet. The government only cares about itself. They're not talking to people in the blocks or council estates. They're talking to people in Chelsea or Mayfair. He gave up on himself in the borough. This is the life. You don't need to look for it, because it's right there. No one carries a shank for fashion. It's not for show. For him, it's for defence. If the time came, he'd be 100% prepared to use it. It's either him or them. He'd rather be in jail than dead. That's the reality. He feels like Superman until it's time to run. He's got his squads back. People get shot at, wet up, people are dying. He's a soldier. If a soldier can do it, he can do it. It's another East Side story. His days are filled with hypervigilance, bear violations, anxiety attacks, and super paranoia. Crack fiends, laughing hyenas, bullies, snitches, slipping, snakes, psychopaths on the front line. You don't know what you're going to hear. Who's going to die next? He doesn't like speeding cars going the wrong way. Hints, black cars, dodgy license plates. He wants to leave. It's a sad life. There's nothing to be glamorised. Children die. Everyone wants to leave. It's just about timing. Dealing food. Roadman running from the Jakes. He can't be doing this no more. But as long as there is drugs and poverty, we'll always have a gang problem. He likes his probation officer. She's like family. He can't even argue with her. Magistrates give him a 12-month referral order under the supervision of a youth offending team. He's enrolled in college. He seems to be turning his life around. No more county lines. No more stab vests for the ghetto youth. No more county lines. No more stab vests for the ghetto youth.
Call that radio, TV, we are live. Thank you, social worker Paul Wellens, tonight, absolute legend. Just a wee shout out to all the patrons who support the show at patreon.com/ you call that radio, or if you're one of the YouTube members, thank you for keeping the show going. So we're having a live video stream right now with the legend Paul Wellens. We're just listening to the new single. We're absolutely brilliant. Which is done in one take, unbelievably.
In one take, yeah. East Side, it's an East Side story, man. That's what it is.
So you were saying that you picked the beats that day as well.
Yeah.
So were you just practicing that as an a cappella piece? Did you
perform
it live a couple of times before?
I just wrote it, read it back to myself once, went in the studios and picked out tunes that fitted the lyrics, really, you know, and we did it. I say we recorded the whole thing in a couple of hours. I mean, there's a lot of London slang on the album, but I'm trying not to talk too much London slang tonight because obviously I know.
Honestly, I've got a Scottish audience. Go for it. Don't dumb it down for us. before he went, an eyelash. I learned already that before we went live, he went for an eyelash, which I'm assuming is a slash.
Yeah, that's
right. Going for a pee. Okay. So yeah, keep the London slang going.
Okay. Yeah, I just saw that you interviewed Jason Williamson there as well from Sleaford Mods, who I love. I've seen him live 3 or 4 times. I'd love to get a gig with him if you can fix that up for me.
I don't think so, man. I don't really think so. It was my pal Jen. She's friends with, I think she knows him personally, and she's the manager. I think that's his wife. So there's some kind of connection there, but there's no. Yeah, I'd take a support slot as well, mate.
Yeah.
To be honest with
you. Or a collab. I'll do a collab.
Or a collaboration. Yeah. They're smashing it live just now. Who else are you enjoying? I mean, I think we're about to see. I've just heard the day that Emil and the Sniffers are supposed to be playing on the 15th of November. They've actually moved their gig to the 29th of this month.
Oh, right.
And it was supposed to be Bob Villain supporting, or we thought Bob Villain was supporting. But I've been loving what Bob Villain's been doing. Have you heard any of his stuff?
Not really, no. I mean, I say, to be honest, I mainly listen to grime and reggae these days.
It's grime. This is kind of grime rock music. Bob Villain, I thought it might have been up your street.
I've heard the name, but I don't know much about it. I mean, obviously, you know, Amber with the Sniffers, it's a great name because, I mean, I used to be a bit of a speed freak myself, you know. Yeah. So as soon as I saw that name, I thought...
They're more straight up Aussie rock and roll. I think they're just a rock and roll band.
Right.
And also,
right.
They did do a collaboration with Sleaford Mods as well, but
but
Bob Villain, definitely check out Bob Villain. Kind of grime with guitars. I might
have heard him. The name seems familiar, but I'm mainly into sort of like people like Koji Radical, you know,
yes.
Kano, Little Sims, those sort of people. You know, very intelligent grime stroke hip hop artists. They're the people I like.
Was it Shoot and Kill? Is it Little Sims?
Shoot and Kill, yeah.
That's a tune, man. One of my favourite tunes of last year. I can't get enough of that tune.
Tier.
And Koji Radical, I don't know a lot about, but I was gutted to miss it, Boomtown, but Koji Radical's had a single out a couple of months ago that I played on the show as well. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And obviously Kano. Oh, you don't need to say anything about Kano. Absolutely.
No. You know your P's and Q's.
Some feedback from the song. Lee, who's an MC up here, a great MC up here, he says, reminds me of Mike Skinner with the slang and poetry kind of vibes.
Yeah, I like the streets, yeah. But to be honest, the anti-social workers apparently slightly influenced the streets. So we came a long time before Mike Skinner, but I don't know. I don't know whether he'd confirm that, but someone told me that. I don't know how true that is.
Yeah, I mean, the Streets' first album was a game changer.
Oh, do you know what? I was in Oxford Street in London, in HMV, the big store there. And they played that the original Pirate Material. And when I heard it, I thought, I've heard nothing like this. This is unreal. And I went straight to the store attendant. I said, yeah, what's this? They said, oh, the streets. I said, yeah, I'll have it right now. Yeah. And I bought it. I played it to death, yeah.
Yeah, I think that absolutely. I mean, I'm not a massive fan of the stuff that came up later. But
no. But
there's something about that that just changed everything.
Yeah,
I never heard anything like it.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry to interrupt. But it reminded me of my pirate radio days, you know, because I used to be on a station called LWR, and we used to play at Tower Blocks, like the North Peckham estate, which is a very heavy estate, you know, where fucking doctors wouldn't go, like medics wouldn't go, but taxis wouldn't go anywhere. But we had a show there, and they used to guard the aerial with baseball bats on the roof to stop rival stations cutting it down and all that. But you know, Mike Skinner's, that album reminded me of those pirate radio days, because LWR, you know, we were playing pioneering, we were like the original rebel pioneers who were playing underground black music, because Radio 1 and all these commercial stations were just, all the DJs sounded like bank managers, you know, and it was, and they were just playing a lot of pop music, and there was no real black music in the 80s on mainstream radio. So we started that scene, and we had DJs like Pete Tong on there. You know, he's gone on to be a superstar. We had Maxi Jazz from Faithless. You know,
legend.
Beautiful, 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 gentle soul he was. And sadly, people like Westwood, who, you know, we don't talk about now.
Can we talk about Westwood?
Do we have to?
Well, no, we don't have to. But
I don't want to get done by his lawyers or anything.
Right, okay. Well, just say, was it a surprise to you, or did you think did you get bad vibes off him?
He was always hanging around with young girls. Yeah, I mean, but I don't want to say further than that. I mean, he started off. I mean, he did nick. There was a reggae DJ called David Rodigan. He used to play at a club called Gossips in Soho, where I also DJed with a guy called Desi Parks, and he was like the king of rare grooves sort of thing. And Westwood, yeah, Nick Rodigan's act, you know, and Rodigan was like the, in my opinion, Westwood nicked Rodigan's act, because Westwood was working as a barman in this club called Gossips, and he used a lot of phrases on radio that Rodigan was using, you know, a lot of the sort of yardy talk and all that, you know, it's all going down with your boy Westwood and all this stuff. And he originally started out playing a bit of R&B and like, he played some good hip hop back in the day. He was well respected by Def Jam, you know, like people like Public Enemy respected him in the early days, and Pac and all these people. But I think the whole thing went to his head, all that power went to his head. And because you know, the biggest name in hip hop in the UK at the time, DJ wise, and he started believing his own sort of publicity, and then with power comes, you know, it's meant to come great responsibility, but I think with him it came with great irresponsibility, and he did a lot of bad things.
Paul's saying there's nothing you know, you could say about Westwood that his lawyers could refute.
But, I mean, I've got to be honest with you. I mean, I did one of his first interviews on the Evening Standard. I interviewed him when he was on the same... He'd gone on a Kiss pirate station by the time I got to LWR. So, but I did know him. I used to stay around his flat in Hammersmith. We used to go up to Soul Weekends together. We used to drive up there, and he used to DJ, and there'd be Trevor Nelson with us and all that mob. And... I didn't see any evidence of the sort of stuff he's been accused of now, really. Although he did like, you know, younger girls. I'm not saying underage girls, but younger girls. And, but, you know, as I say, I just think that the whole thing went to his head, and he just thought, you know, I'm untouchable. I can do what I like because I've got all that wealth, all that power.
Forget about Tim Westwood. Let's talk about the two other, the actual legends that you mentioned there, Pete Tong, Maxi Jazz. Pete Tong, we're talking about rhyming slang. When did
it's all gone
start
Pete
using
Tong?
Pete Tong is, when did he? When was the point that his name started getting used as rhyming slang?
Well, it was mainly in like the warehouse parties and the acid raves in London. I mean, I used to go to a lot of them. You know, I was good friends with a guy called Terry Farley, who who started off this fanzine called Boyzone, and I used to write for that. And yeah, that was all going around then. And and the other thing was, they used to say things like, "Oh, he needs a couple of Wilsons for that," you know. And that was Wilson Pickett Ticket, and you know, it's all these strange things. And then of course the Shaman. They reproduced all that, didn't they? Mr. C reproduced all that, you know. Anyone got any salmon and, you know, all that. Ebenezer Good and all that stuff, you know.
And Vera Lynn's, any Veras?
Any Veras, yeah. Anyone got any Veras? No, I mean, the slang now is very different. I mean, I'm a sort of old school Londoner, really. But, you know, nowadays, you know, all the kids, I mean, my kids used to talk what they called Jafakan, you know, they used to call, like, almost talking us, but it was mainly sort of a lot of hip-hop slang, a lot of grime slang, but they'd almost talk in, and my kids are white, I mean, I'm married to a black woman now, but my first wife, my kids were like using a lot of Jamaican slang and what they call Jafakan. So, but now, you know, a lot of the London kids now, the white kids, are talking in a lot of almost like a pure Jamaican accent, you know.
The patois.
The patois.
Patois.
You get me, star.
We got some more comments about the song. Words of Life's Truths with beats and a booming bass line. Loving it, says Epi.
Oh, thank you, Epi, yeah.
Colette saying, increase the peace, what a good rap lyric. Your wee man is bro of the night, love your fresh characters. Bonnie, you've done it again, love your bones, baby doll. And G. Lee.
You call baby doll a lot, ain't you?
Yeah, well,
it's baby doll. So I call you baby doll.
She's baby doll. She calls everyone baby doll, and she is baby doll.
Oh, right,
she is Colette is baby doll. And so are you. So am I, and so is everybody watching this. These are all baby dolls, but Colette's the original baby doll, and the original sugar cube as well. Jay Lee saying, that was an epic tune from the beat to the bars, great concept and message.
Respect to you, Jay Lee.
It's a good noise, says Stuart. Great tune, says Lou.
Thank you, Lou.
And Lou's also asking about, is that the new You Call That Radio jingle? I like it, it's funky. No, it's actually one of the old ones, but Colin Simon, Gordy Duncan Jr. made a 4-minute song, and we've only used 20 seconds of it, but that's like the guitar solo that nearer the end. We're actually going to do, we're going to release an album called Now That's What I Call You Call That Radio, and we'll just put all the jingles on it for it. So if you're a patron, expect that in your inbox soon. I'm just going to put it together. And we've got about 6 songs now that's been used for the jingles. Really good tune, loved it, says Marco.
Thank you.
Angela loves the London slang. Good to see you here, Angela.
Thank you, Angela.
Emil and the Sniffers will be a great gig. My next one's Deep Purple, then Mickey Nines, and finishing the year off with Wet Leg.
A lot of Wet Leg, yeah.
Well, Wet Leg, I met them at McCool's. They played at a tiny little pub called McCool's about, I don't know, 8 months ago. Mm. And now they're playing in, like, what was it, Jimmy Kimmel or whatever, and last night in New York.
Yeah.
They have, I've never seen a band blow up quite as quick as that in a long time.
Bit of lady power, right on sister.
Well, they said that they're going to do the show. They chatted after the gig, but I think they may have got too big now. I don't know. Mm. It's worth an email. I think I've maybe missed the boat, though. I should have followed up a bit quicker. Have you heard of Aaliyah? Am I saying that right? I think she's great, says Epi.
I'm not sure about that.
I think that was when we were talking about the grime stuff. I'll write that down and check it out.
I know Aaliyah.
Aaliyah, I think it's a different one. G. Lee saying, I'd good to know, man. Could definitely see Mike being influenced by you. And The Grand Don't Come From Free was a classic. I know there was some good tunes in that. I hadn't heard anything like the first album, so I think it didn't have quite the same effect on me.
Mm.
Did I not spot another Gyro's gig on the 26th? Yes, the Gyro Babies will be playing Classic Grand on the 26th of November. That is correct. Well, I'm going to give another shout out to the album one more time. It's M1 Music. We've actually done over an hour now. So it's M1 Music.
How'd you get to put in the Burston Festival thing, because that's a dedication to my wife. I've got a little story about that, very interesting.
Yes,
story.
Okay, well, man, I'm in the rush.
Yeah.
I'm getting that today. M1Music.com for the album. If you've been enjoying the tunes tonight, I'll put the link in the comments as well. So we've got, obviously, we've covered your journalism, the music, but of course you're performing as a spoken word performer as well. Yeah. I believe this is a spoken word thing that we're about to check out.
Yeah.
So what is it we're about to watch?
Oh, sorry, yeah, she's from Burston Festival this year. I did a gig where, which Burston Festival, it was the longest strike in history, where a lot of the school kids walked out and supported the teachers getting sacked by the sort of farm owners. And I did a gig with Mick Lynch from the RMT, you know, genuine working class hero, and the comedian Mark Thomas. And I did a thing called, it's one of the tracks on my new album, and it's a thing called Empress, and it's a dedication to my wife, who is actually the niece of the late great reggae superstar Sugar Minor. So I feel truly blessed I met her on, I know this is going to sound flash, but I had a bit of a tax rebate. I met her on a world cruise, which is only about 10 grand, but she was the only one under 60 on the boat. I thought she looked, you know, hot as fuck. And 5 years later, we're still married. And, you know, I've had some ups and downs in my life. I've had some real shit happen in my life. But right now, I feel I'm living the dream. You know what I mean? I live by the coast. I'm 2 minutes walk from the beach. I'm writing poetry. I'm playing out. And I'm married to this beautiful woman. And this is Empress, my tribute to her. If you got it there. Her son, my stepson, cried when he heard it, so, which is lovely. You still there? Hello?
Maybe. I am here. Okay. I'm just getting this set. I'm sorry, I muted myself because I thought we were ready to go. And could you just, could you just give me a wee bit of background to the festival, and then are we ready to go in about 5 seconds?
Right. What, more about the Burston?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's an annual festival, so it's like a socialist festival. You get all the trade unions come up, all the labour movement, and loads of people have played there. Like, you know, you get a lot of big speakers. You know, you've had Tony Benn speak there, Dennis Skinner, you know, the late, great Bob Crowe, one of my political heroes. And you get a lot of bands as well. Billy Bragg plays there, you know, all the usual suspects, Attila.
Have you heard the Attila's dub album as well?
Yeah, I've got to be honest, when he told me he'd done a dub album, I thought, oh, this ain't going to work, you know what I mean? Because I've known Attila 41 years, I put one of his first gigs on. I love Attila, we played loads of gigs with him back in the day with the Antisocial Workers. And I thought, I don't know about him doing dub poetry, you know, because he's a really good punk poet. And I thought, I don't know, maybe he's not going to fit in with it with the reggae sound. But in actual fact, it's a great album. I gave it, you know, it completely changed my preconceptions about it. Yeah, and Benjamin Zephaniah loved it, so that's good enough for me. And I played with Benjamin, you know, love the man.
Yeah, I had similar thoughts. I was just sort of more surprised that he was doing a dub album. So obviously, I've just known him as a fantastic poet, but incredible. I really liked it. I seen him. He performed at the Icebox, and I thought it worked really well. Definitely, it seems to work a year. And then, like I said, Donald Jenkins is the guy you should check out as well for more grime poetry from the Geordie end of the country.
Right, okay. But,
so I'll check out Donald Jenkins. I think
Don does
some a great night in Newcastle for spoken word. I'm sure he would love to have.
Maybe I'll team up with you. I'll share a stage with you one night.
That'd absolutely, but we'll get up in Glasgow, no bother. I'm sure Don would love to have you down up in Newcastle as well.
Yeah, the weird thing about Attila's album though, because it's an all white production. You know, the guys who are doing the reggae are all white. And obviously we did a very similar thing with the Antisocial Workers in 83. But the thing was, we were playing with a Mad Professor and we were playing with virtually all Jamaican musicians. I mean, we had on drums, we had the guy who's in the film Rockers. I don't know if you've ever seen that film. It's a top reggae film. Well, the guy who's the lead character in that was the drummer on our albums. So I personally didn't think it was going to work, but I've done a great job. And apparently his producer... Attila's producer is working with Freddie McGregor in Jamaica, so you know he's doing all right. Tingsley Salmon, I think his name is.
Amazing. This is the. I've got it ready now. This is Paul Live from Burston Fest.
Dedicated to my beautiful wife Roma, who's filming in the front row there. The niece of the reggae superstar Sugar Minor. She's the biggest superstar in the house today. Woo! And this is called Empress. You are Sugar's cuz, always got good things going. From reggae royalty with humbleness flowing. You are my empress, my warrior woman, my Jamaican queen, I'm your number one fan. We saw the whole world and met at sea, and soon you were my wifey to be. I remember visiting your school in downtown Kingston, retracing your steps out of the friend zone to Tuff Gong Studios and Marley and Tosh's grave. And your joyful smile could save any rave. You say nice like rice and stop your noise. You're feisty, but you know how to treat silly boys. We clapped for higher pay for healthcare workers. You nursed all your life, no shirkers. Now I just want to grow old with you, because I love everything and anything you do. Now I just want to grow old with you, because I love everything and anything you do.
Amazing stuff. Thank you. Brilliant. Empress.
Yeah, it's got a lot of memories for that, me, that, because recently my stepson, who's a real hard East End geezer, you know what I mean? He's a proper geezer. He came up, and obviously, you know, I'm his stepdad now I've met Roma. And he said, Paul, that tune Empress that you played about my mum, he said, it just moved me to tears. And he started crying when we were having dinner. And I just held his hand and I started crying. I know, and we're both, you know, tough cookies, really. You know, we've both gone through a lot of shit in our life. And it was such an emotional moment. And my wife started filling up as well. But yeah, it's amazing the power of words, you know, just when you're spilling your truth out, you know?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. It's something about with spoken word, when it's done right, man, it just hits. It hits. G. Lee saying, amazing poem. Lou saying, now that's a true love poem.
Thank you, Lou.
Respect to the wife, says Eppy.
Nice.
And what bra words to say about your good lady, sweet, says Colette.
I'm learning your Scottish slang.
As I say, don't dumb down for us. Geese as much London slang as you like. Beautiful words, keep living the dream, says Angela.
Yeah, I'll try.
And Empress, yes, and also, by the way, funny enough, we've Empress, ironically, at 9 o'clock tonight, we're actually going to be premiering a live stream of the best, probably, in my opinion, one of the best rappers in the country, Empress. I don't think, if you watch this tonight, you're not going to deny it. Empress, I say Empress, I don't even know if I think because her name's Emma, I thought her stage name was Empress, but it might just be Empress, I don't know.
Clever, yeah.
But whatever it is, she is phenomenal. 9 o'clock on our YouTube channel, I'll put a wee link in the comments to check it out, and you'll see how we do hip-hop in Paisley.
Yeah, man.
I
like that Scottish guy who was on the rap game, you know. I thought he was one of the best on it.
Shogun.
Shogun, man.
Yes,
yeah.
Aye, he was a bit cheeky. He got kicked off.
He had a lot of attitude, but I loved
yes,
it.
Yes, aye, he does have an attitude. His first gig was on my stage at Audioship.
Was it?
So I got him his first gig. Wow. He's done amazing.
Yeah,
but, I mean, I think they were trying to tell him what to do, and it's just not how he rolls. But yeah, he did good. I mean, I think. Maybe I was a bit biased, but I thought he was the best on the show that year.
I thought so, yeah. And he was so different, really, because there are a lot of Londoners because Crepton Conan and Target, you know, they're all Londoners, so there is a London bias. So it's great to hear different regional accents, you know.
Absolutely, man. Scotland's got a phenomenal scene. It's just hard. And it's interesting, we were talking to Don Jenkins about that. Everywhere outside of London's got that issue. Various people in London don't really take it as seriously as they might. And I suppose another thing is, it's about the slang as well. You know, if you try to be true to yourself and speak in your own accent, then you're going to... But I mean, I didn't know American slang when I got into hip-hop. You just learn it. You know, I didn't know. Yeah. We were talking about Mike Skinner earlier on the streets. That was the first time... I mean, the first time I heard that, I was like, I don't know if I like that. I don't know. I couldn't... It seemed as your rascal. It was like, it was so much to get my brain to get...
Yeah,
it was like,
I wasn't used to it. That first Easy album. Because he grew up about a mile from where I used to live, so, you know, it's a different generation.
I've never heard anything like this, and I was addicted to it. I just kept on listening to it again and again, and I was like, hold on, I actually fucking love this. Do you know what I mean? But of course, it was so new, it was like, and that's usually the best songs are like that, aren't they? They don't, it grows on you, and you're just taking it all in.
Oh, mate, when I heard that first Dizzy album, it gassed me up so much. I think I had it on repeat for about a week.
Yeah.
I just never heard anything like it, you know.
Well, you can imagine, from a Glaswegian perspective, because you're hearing this accent, You're not used to hearing that in this new type of music.
Yeah. So I mean, and the weird thing was, he was also name dropping places I knew. You know, very autobiographical. You know, I mean, I've got a track on the new album called East is East, which talks about, you know, all the East London things I did. You know, good, bad, whatever, ugly, and So that's my sort of homage to East London. I say, even though I was born in the London New Towns, there's a lot of East End in me, you know.
And have you got gigs coming up? Is there anything in the book just now?
Well, at the moment, I don't know if I told you, I'm seeing an agent. And he's meant to be lining me up festivals and benefit gigs and charity fundraisers. And he's well connected. You know, I'm going down to Soho to see him, and he's with a lot of household names. I won't mention the people, but. And hopefully I'm going to sign with him next week. So, yeah, I mean, he's talking about maybe the small stage at Glasgow and Rebellion and all sorts of places, yeah.
That'd be amazing, man. Amazing. Yeah. Well, give us a shout if you fancy a trip up to Scotland. I'm sure we could...
I'd love it. My missus loves travelling, and she said what she loves about coming out with me, because now I'm doing poetry, because I've decided to put the DJing on the back burner. You know, I've had enough of that. There's too many egotists, too many snakes, too many... I mean, the great thing about poetry is you're creating your own work, whereas DJing, you're just recreating someone else's work, you know? And the brilliant thing is, you know, I could do a poetry gig. I don't know what you pay in Scotland. I mean, what would I get playing at the Icebox out of interest?
No idea. Xbox is now no longer exists, sadly.
All right, well, let me just say, for instance, right, say I get paid 150, 200 quid, right, to do a poetry gig, right? I'd only have to do a 20-minute set. I get, you know, if the audience are decent, you know, they'll applaud after every poem. And all I've got to bring along is my bloody poetry book, you know what I mean? That's all I've got to carry.
Bring a few extras and you can sell some.
Yeah, whereas if DJing, this is my, like, these are all the lyrics from the album. This is my original thing, you know. But if I was DJing, if I had to play out and do my own night, I'd have to be lugging all this heavy gear. For 200 quid, I'd have to play at least 2 hours. Do you know what I mean? And my missus got sick of it. She said, I hate all this DJing, you know. And no one's applauding you. They're doing their own thing, you know what I mean? They're buzzing off their nut doing whatever they're doing. But
late nights as well, you're playing.
Yeah, and also, you know, my missus just got fed up with it. She said, I don't do that no more. But she loves the idea about going all over the country doing poetry gigs. And she said, you know, you'll do a poem about me, you'll get some applause, you've only got to work 20 minutes, and, you know, sweet as a nut. You know,
it's still early enough to go for a pint somewhere else.
Yeah, she said we can make a holiday out of it. And that's what we're going to do a bit of travelling. Like when I come up to Scotland, I'll come and see the sights. I mean, I've only been to Scotland a couple of times. I've obviously been to the Edinburgh Fringe and all that stuff. But I've done, I remember once I was working for this PR company. I was like poacher turned gamekeeper. I was a journalist turned PR, which is not great. But and they were based in Scotland, but I was working in London. And they phoned me up one day and said, get a flight from Stansted to Glasgow. We've got some news for you. So I took a flight up to Glasgow. And the news was, they were giving me the tin tack. They were sacking me. And I thought, I can't believe this. I've flung all the way up to Glasgow for them to out me of the job. So I said, I ain't having this. So I said, can someone take me around to the Celtic ground? You know, because my Scottish team is Celtic, you know, being with the socialist connections and all that. I've got the Celtic shirt. I'm a West Ham supporter, but my Scottish team is Celtic. And she, the receptionist goes, oh, I feel so sorry for you that you got the sack. So I'll drive you to the Celtic ground. So she, bless her heart, she drove me in a little, I don't know what it was, a little mini. We drove to the Celtic ground. I touched the wall. I thought, wow, I've actually been at the Celtic ground. So that was amazing for me.
Amazing. Brilliant stuff. So you've been to Celtic Park.
Even though I got the sack. And then straight after that, I had to get a plane back and tell my wife I got made redundant.
Oh, but you're going to see Celtic Park.
But I've got to see the Celtic ground.
It's not all bad. It's not. It's not all bad. Yeah, no, we'll get you up. We'll get you up there. Is it? Sure, saying his Icebox gone, I twerked there. Yes, the Icebox, sadly. Icebox was a great community venue. I had a pet food bank, I had a normal food bank, it did clothes swap so people could just take free clothes and stuff. They're still going to keep the charity work up, they're still going to be doing the food bank stuff. And,
right.
So yeah, keep my Icebox page. They won't come back.
You know, we talked about having an eyelash earlier.
Yeah.
Well, I'm absolutely breaking my neck.
Well, that's fine, mate. That was maybe a sign that it's time to wrap up.
Yeah. Do you want to put that Who's Watching You on?
I'm going to finish with Who's Watching. That's exactly what I'm going to do.
Okay.
Give it a quick intro and then you can go for an eyelash.
All right, here we go. This is Who's Watching You by the Antisocial Workers from with the Mad Professor, the legendary dub producer from 1983 from the album Positive Style. And it was played by John Peel on Radio 1, and that's how it happened.
Amazing stuff, mate. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you tonight.
Thank you, mate.
See you in...
Yeah, sure, mate. You can check my census form. My name's the Orgasm Addict. 147 people live here. Our outside toilet has 4 inside doors. I go to work in a submarine. I'm a part-time rap gasser and full-time piss artist. And I was born on the small island of St. Bollocks. That's right, straight up, mate, straight up. Who's watching you in the land of the true? Phone tapping census forms, they're the keepers of the human zoo. Our lies become files in their dark office room. Computers know about you from the womb to the tooth. Life becomes a memory. We're figures in a lottery game. When your number is called, run like hell, cause it'll never be the same. But beware, cause I'll have a printout of where you're running to. Cause state surveillance wants control over me and you. Repeat, over me. You repeat over me and you.